All right, everyone, welcome to the Euro Snob Podcast. My name is Alex John, and I am not joined by Ian Smith this week because he's on a beach having a drink somewhere, so hopefully he's having one in my honor. But I do have a special guest for you this week. My buddy Jared Lay will be joining us today, and he's a big Manchester United fan, but we're still friends despite that. But I know Jared from law school. We're really good buddies, and you know, we kind of bonded over our love of soccer. So, Jared, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Glory, glory, Man United.
All right, that's the end of the show, guys.
I know you told me I couldn't play the song, but I got you.
You did, you did. You. But just go ahead and tell the folks kind of about your soccer background and, you know, how you became a United fan and growing up a soccer fan.
Well, I played in high school. I played my entire life. Up until high school, and growing up, my dad, he would travel to England a lot. So he would, every time he'd come back, he would bring me some sort of soccer item, knowing that I was playing as a child. And one time I remember he brought me back, it was 1999. He brought me back the Manchester United jersey. And that was the first sports jersey I owned. I think I was about nine. Cherished that jersey, loved it. So I guess basically I started as a bandwagon United fan, and I still am a bandwagon United fan considering, you know, he bought that jersey in 1999, probably at London Airport, you know, the only jersey they had there because they were the winningest team, still are, still the greatest team in the world.
That was tough to listen to, that last part, I got to be honest with you, but can't argue with the recent success. But I know you also grew up in Ohio, and big U.S. soccer fan like myself. For those who can't see the stream, Jared is wearing a U.S. soccer jersey. Unfortunately, it has not been a good last week for U.S. soccer. You know, speaking of Ohio, we had the big rivalry game with Mexico in Columbus on Friday, and the U.S. took a deserved loss in that one, honestly. A 2-1 loss probably could have been way worse. But, you know, Jared, I just want to get your take on what you've seen, you know, that game and what you've read and kind of your general takeaway from everything.
I mean, it breaks my heart. I mean, Dozacera was our thing and it's gone now. Like, Columbus was our fortress. What do we have left? I guess we have maybe Seattle. We've done pretty well up there. But, I mean, they come into Columbus now and they pretty much beat the crap out of us. And it's not great. Not a great start.
And I think that's a great point about the Dozacera too, because I think there was a psychological block that maybe...
There definitely
was. Yeah, definitely. And so Mexico had that, and I think that's gone now. The psychological edge you had is now gone.
Right, right. You start your... That's supposed to be your bank game. You're supposed to... You always win 2-0 to start qualifying in Columbus. You know, you have that in the bank against Mexico, and now that's gone. And now we have to go to Mexico where we're going to lose... We never win them down there.
Do you think that Dozacera kind of played into our players' minds maybe a little bit of complacency?
I don't know if it's complacency, but I definitely think they were probably haunted by the Dozacera legacy. I mean, you look at the team that you look at it last night, and they're done. They're not playing for Klinsmann whatsoever. And I think when you come out the way they did, with a formation that they never use, they were just set up to fail, you know?
Yeah, I was actually going to get your take on that. When you saw the formation and you saw the personnel, the 3-5-2, you know, which we haven't played since we had a friendly against Chile a couple years ago, with the personnel we had in there, what did you think when you saw that? Did you kind of have an inclination of, oh, this is not going to go well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's pretty good research that you did pulling out that Chile.
You like that, don't you?
Formation. That's pretty good. That's some in-depth stuff you come to the Eurosnob podcast for right there. But yeah, I mean, I was driving to Gainesville, Florida while this game was happening. So I listened to it on the radio before I was able to rewatch it. But the announcers on the radio, they were talking about how Klinsmann comes out in his formation, 3-5-2, and immediately the players are able to see that signal over the coach, and they immediately make a switch right off the bat. Like, tactically outclassed by Juan Carlos Osorio, who was a fired New York Red Bulls coach. It just blows my mind that this is where we are so long into his tenure.
And that's a thing. And I think it's a legitimate point that other people have brought up, that you've had these friendlies against Cuba and New Zealand like last month. Why not try the 3-5-2 then? Why bring it in now in the biggest game against your biggest rival?
You don't just implement some formula. You don't just implement something like this in a game against Mexico, in a game that you're supposed to have in the bank, you know? Like, this is something that you have to work at, you have to practice with.
And especially because I don't think...
But I have no doubt that.
I was going to say, I don't know if a lot of these guys even play this formation at club level.
I mean, I would weigh more in on that if I actually was a fan of any of the pretty much crap teams that they play
for. Yeah, that's also true, let's be honest. But in terms of Klinsmann's thinking, I mean, you look at Mexico's team, they have really dynamic wide players. They're very fast in midfield, but they've also got a lot of fluidity in their attack with Dos Santos and Vela, Chicharito, you know, Hector Herrera, all these guys who were really skilled on the ball, Andres Guardado. So there's so much skill and pace there that their ability to interchange makes three center backs really kind of, you know, it kind of weakens you, because I think none of those guys are particularly fast. None of them can keep up with movement. So, you know, if you were playing against a really tough physical striker, I can almost see the point in playing 3-5-2. But against this sort of team, it just didn't make sense. I mean, I guess the thinking was to maybe get Fabian Johnson and Timmy Chandler playing a little higher up the pitch as wingbacks rather than fullbacks. But, you know, in order to do that, you have to have a certain amount of the ball to allow your fullbacks to press forward. And I don't think we saw that with the midfield of Michael Bradley and Jermaine Jones. And let's be honest, Michael Bradley could be the topic for an entire show, because I don't think I've ever seen someone play so poorly and get a pass for it. But, you know, I think when you look at that formation, I like Bobby Wood and Altidor up top. I thought that was an interesting pairing, and I think they complement each other well. Pulisic at the 10 was a weird move, because he plays wide for Dortmund. He never plays in the 10. I think that's the long-term goal for him, but why take a guy out of position who doesn't play there for his club yet? But, you know, in terms of that Jones-Bradley pairing, is that where you would say the game was lost, or, you know, was it lost in defense? Where are you pointing to when you look at this game?
All of it.
Sad but true,
just
right?
All of it. You know my thoughts and feelings on Jones and Bradley. I think he's past it. But our defense is just... we've lost 6-1 in our first two games. Like, that's awful. Awful. Like, our defense, last night our defense was, I don't think they were there. I think we just had some scrubs out of the stands playing. Like, those guys weren't professional soccer players.
I don't know what happened to John Brooks, especially.
Well, John Brooks he was doing the mannequin challenge. He was winning.
The
mannequin challenge.
He absolutely destroyed every mannequin challenge participant I've seen so far, because
yes,
he was awful. And, you know, I think for the winning goal for Mexico, I mean, he's obviously took a lot of blame. And, you know, you could also argue that Altidor should have been in there, you know, covering that set piece. He was just standing there. But, you know, Klinsmann came out in the press conference after the Mexico game and said, you know, basically threw Brooks under the bus. And, you know, you and I have both played sports, certainly not at that level, but when you have a coach throw you under the bus like Klinsmann did, that had to have affected his confidence against Costa Rica.
It's a great way to get, you know, just throw him right under the bus. There's nothing motivates a player more than knowing that your manager doesn't have any faith in you.
Yeah, and so I think you saw such a timid John Brooks against Costa Rica, and I can only think it's because of what happened against Mexico. I will say no one on the back line was any better than him.
I mean, at the same time, you could give him that excuse, but still, you're a player. You're supposed to play the game, and he was just a shell of what I've seen him do in the past.
That's the thing. He's had a really good season for Hertha Berlin. You know, he's one of their mainstays, and you know, you see him come to the U.S. and up until these past two games, he's been very good for us recently. So that was surprising.
Right. Very surprising.
You know, I know Jeff Cameron was out, and I think if he was healthy, maybe you would have played a more traditional 4-4-2 to start with. Maybe he thought that Brooks wouldn't have a capable partner with a two center back pairing, so maybe he tried to go with three. I really couldn't tell you, but you know, all things considered, in the Mexico game, I will say in the second half, I thought we came back pretty strong. But you know, we got that goal from Bobby Wood early in the second half. What would you take away from that second half up until the game-winning goal? I thought we played pretty well in the second half to make up for a horrible first half.
I mean, it was encouraging going into the Costa Rica game. You know, I thought we were able to from it. I didn't think it would snowball into quite what it has. But I mean, Mexico's a tough team. Like we say that we expect to win 2-0 at home, you know, in Columbus. That's our rock there in qualifying. But they are a tough team. So like a 2-1 result isn't completely surprising to me.
Yeah,
especially since we're going through this sort of transition period where we're kind of, it seems to me that we're kind of in between generations. I mean, we're the Dempsey Donovan era, that's kind of faded out, and now we have Pulisic coming up, but then we have a bunch of mediocre players kind of in the middle. Brooks is good, but Brooks, you know, you saw what happened when Brooks doesn't play up to his typical level, which is to be expected from every player. Everybody goes through ups and downs. It just, there's nothing to this team right now that inspires any confidence.
And I think that generation,
despite a better
season. Yeah, I think that generation argument's a really good one too, because you're right. You know, now with Dempsey pretty much faded out of the picture, the next core group of players, you're looking at Jermaine Jones, Michael Bradley, you know, Jozy Altidore, you know, to a lesser extent, guys like Wood and Johnson. But, you know, I'd say those first few names I mentioned, and all of them are, you know, mediocre players. You don't build a squad around those guys. And yet all your young promising players are not quite ready yet to take that mantle. You know, obviously you do have Pulisic and he's going to be special, but you know,
he's 18 years
old.
Yeah.
You can't put the future of the entire national team on an 18-year-old kid. You know, you got Jordan Morris who was injured. I know you got, Emerson Heinemann, although he's not getting much time at Bournemouth. You got Zalalem, you got Kellen Acosta. Yeah, you got Lyndon Gooch. Exactly. So there are some young, promising pieces, but this current generation, you're exactly right, is just mediocre. And, you know, it kind of brings me to my next question, which was how much of this is on Jurgen Klinsmann and how much of this is on the players? Because, you know, the point that some people have made is like, oh, well, you know, Bradley and Arena had MLS players on their team and they were able to do okay. But I would argue that the talent pool in terms of, you know, the national team professional players is not any higher than it's been before. I think the future is brighter, but I don't think the current crop is any better.
I agree with that 100%. I team, this team as it's currently constructed would definitely not beat those teams from 2002, 2006, 2010. They're a bunch of role players missing a star in the center, and Michael Bradley should be that guy, but he's regressed to a role player at best. Right now that it's just, I mean, the future is bright. We have a bunch of young attacking, highly talented talent coming through the pipes. You hope they progress like they should. You hope they don't turn into a bunch of Freddie Adus out there. But right now it's just, pretty blah.
That's the thing, and there's like nothing to be excited about right now if you're a U.S. fan other than Christian Pulisic. And you know, like we said, that's so much pressure to put on an 18-year-old kid who has just burst onto the scene.
He should be weaned into the process. He shouldn't be the face of U.S. soccer right now. We've seen what that does in the past to these kids. I mean, who has handled that? Who has handled that pressure? Donovan, maybe?
But even he had to come crawling back to MLS after he failed
exactly.
In Europe, you know?
Yeah, he went to Leverkusen, and he couldn't – that's where he went, right, Leverkusen?
Yeah, by Leverkusen, yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't cut it there. He got homesick and found solace in Southern California. But to answer your original question, I mean, who should be blamed for this? You got to give Klinsmann credit for making the future so bright. I mean, I've talked to you about this before. I love the fact that we're able to recruit some of the players that we have that we probably wouldn't have pulled in the past. But at the same time, on the field product, it's leaving a lot to be desired. So for this specific loss, I mean, I gotta say Klinsmann's probably 60-40. At the same time, players got to do their job. Like, you can't just give up, but there's somebody pushing there, somebody who's pushing them to this stage. I mean, it seems like we're just not consistent. Like, the players just don't know what the goal is, what they're trying to accomplish. We're just kind of out there.
Yeah, and I think with the Mexico game, I think sometimes Klinsmann outthinks himself. He tries to be too clever. So he thought that
And he's not a tactician.
that's a thing. With
I mean,
Germany in the 2010 World Cup, I believe it was, or no, it was 2006 when he was the manager, right?
right, yeah.
And he got them pretty far, but everyone said it was Yogi Löw who was the tactician, and Klinsmann was kind of the big picture guy. And to be fair to Klinsmann, a lot of people credit the rise of this current German generation on the steps that he put in. So you hope that we're going to see the fruits of that in, 4 or 5 years. But
Yeah,
you're
but
absolutely.
at the same time, Love won 8 years after Klinsmann, stepped away as national team coach. That can't all be Klinsmann. You can't credit that all to him. That's a lot on Jurgen. That's like almost
Yeah.
all Jurgen winning that. So I feel like he stepped aside, and they took off. I think he was more holding them back. I mean, yeah, great. We could give him architect's credit, but still, like I don't think if he was the manager, they would accomplish anywhere near what they were able to accomplish.
Do you think?
And
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, do you think with Klinsmann, he came in with a lot of ideas about how he wanted to change the US style of play and this and that. Do you think that given the talent that was not possible, or do you think, you should still be able to play a cohesive brand of soccer, even with not necessarily superstars, but you saw Costa Rica yesterday. They looked really fluid in attack, and their talent level is not, as a whole, from top to bottom, is not where ours is. They have top level players, obviously, like Navas and Ruiz and Campbell and those guys. But top to bottom, the talent level is not there. So how much of the fact that there's a lack of talent gives Clemson a pass?
A little bit. I think his job is ridiculously hard, though. I mean, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but he was brought in to kind of change the entire culture and implement this nice free-flowing style. And you look at the players on the team, and we've never really been set up to play that kind of style. I mean, we've always been the run fast, try hard, outwork everyone, that sort of mentality. So getting a little bit more technical with it it's going to take time. We're going to have to implement a full top to bottom change, which starts at the youth level. And I think that's where Klinsmann's legacy will be really left is if, I mean, I don't follow youth soccer, so somebody much more knowledgeable on this subject than myself should probably speak on this. But if we are able to produce players through our youth systems that are more technically gifted, then I think that'll be a win for him overall, even if the results in specific national team games, which get us all pissed off, aren't really there currently.
So do you think we might even see the fruits of his labors in the next cycle? Which sounds weird because obviously we're like saying, oh, just wait till later.
Well, the
But
next cycle might be the next time we play in the World Cup.
that's something that's kind of been brought up. Is there any fear on your part about not qualifying?
Yeah, definitely. This is what, our worst start to the hex ever? Something
I
like that.
believe so. And if you factor in goal differential and everything like that.
I mean, since what, 2002, we've always had this home Columbus win to count on. So there's 3 points that at least got us there. Now that's gone. that we could probably almost guarantee another loss down in Mexico at Estadio Azteca. I don't know when that game's scheduled for, but I'm assuming it's going to be hot as hell down there, and we're going to be out of breath within the first 17 minutes. So that one's there's another loss right there. Costa Rica, we better play them at home in Alaska or in a blizzard or something. Otherwise, they're going to run us off the pitch the way our current team's set up. You'd think you'd be able to handle business against the other teams, though. Sneak at least, if we don't sneak into the playoff spot, that four spot, then that's insane. That'll blow my mind. I will be genuinely shocked if we cannot recover to at least grab that spot. But I think it'll be tough to we should be able to crack the top three. But it'll be uphill battle going from this poor of a start. But at the same time, Costa Rica away. Always, I think we lost our last hex. That's always a tough game.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, you bank on that 2-0 Mexico game, but at the same time, it's never really a bank. So I think we'll, I'm not full. It'll be definitely an uphill battle, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, we've dug ourselves a hole. You would think we'd pull out at least, I want to say, 4 wins out of 6 games against, because you get Panama, Trinidad, and Honduras. You need to get 4 out of 6 wins there, in my opinion, maybe even 5. Because like you said, those other games are going to be really challenging. So you don't want to have to go into a playoff situation where, you know, you never know how those are going to be scheduled, and, you know, you might be playing in conditions you're not familiar with. So that's a tough one, but I mean, do you look at this and do you think Klinsmann's job is in jeopardy?
I'm surprised he wasn't fired today.
I'm actually shocked, I have to say.
I definitely think his job is in jeopardy. I mean, well, I'm looking at the schedule now. We have Honduras and Panama in March. Then what? Trinidad. And then we play Mexico in June. So that'll be fun. That'll be a great trip to Mexico.
In the hot of summer, yeah. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, so that you will bank like a 7-0 loss there. But Panama away, that's – all these places away are ridiculously hard because you go down there and they're throwing bags of piss at you and you can't sleep at night because the fans are pulling the fire alarms and standing outside your hotel, and it's insane.
Yeah, so, that's the thing.
Away games scare the crap out of me.
For people who don't understand CONCACAF, like, it's exactly what you said. Like, it's not necessarily the talent of the teams you're playing. It's everything else that goes with that. You know, you've got the field conditions, which are always terrible. You've got the weather. You've got crazy fans. You've got these broken down stadiums in many cases. You know, you're playing in situations that are very difficult to handle. So, you know, all those games, you can never bank on one being a win, you know, but now that you go into these away games needing a result, that really kind of changes things, in my opinion. And so, you know, I am surprised that Klinsmann wasn't fired today, just because I think the media, first of all, the soccer media here has always been against him, in my opinion, just because he doesn't really pander to MLS. And, you know, he says things about our soccer knowledge, like somehow we don't know the game here. And I think that rubs a lot of people in the media the wrong way. So they've always kind of been pushing that, you know, beating that drum. But I think fans have turned against him too, to the point where I think the damage might be done, and I'm not sure it can be reversed. You know, we might win the next 1 or 2 games in qualifying, but I'm not sure that's going to change anything in terms of the tone. So I'm actually kind of shocked he wasn't fired. You know, I've read stuff on Twitter today that Bruce Arena is being lined up to potentially replace him, which would frustrate the bejesus out of me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because
that's just fantastic.
Yeah, because everyone brings up 2002. 4 years later, he didn't get us out of the group in 2006. And I'm, you know, now it's almost, what, 10 years later. And, you know, the talent pool hasn't really improved any, in my opinion. And,
nope.
You know, another thing that Arena said that kind of worries me is he said, you know, I think the U.S. team should only be American-born players. So somehow he's joined the Abby Wambach School of Xenophobia by not wanting, like, foreign-born players. So, you know, the likes of a Fabian Johnson or you know, Timmy Chandler or John Brooks, like these guys who are crucial parts of your teams, with Johnson and Brooks especially, you worry that those guys are going to be alienated. Maybe they won't be called in, you know, because I think the fear for a lot of soccer fans is that if you lose Klinsmann, who's kind of been outspoken and been critical of MLS, you know, MLS, you know, Garber is going to push for U.S. soccer to hire an MLS guy who's going to want to call in only MLS players and pander to them. Is that a concern in your opinion, or is that something that, you know, we shouldn't be worrying about?
You know, it's a concern. I mean, it definitely is. I'm definitely in line with Klinsmann's way of thought on this subject. I think it's great what we've been able to do and the players that we've been able to pull and recruit from around the world, mainly Germany, but, you know, from other places as well. I think, like, that's something that we don't produce a lot of great American talent on our own. And that might be terrible for me to say. I don't know. I'm sure your listeners have some sort of thought on that. I don't have a Twitter, so I don't get
to. No, I think they'd agree with you, honestly. Yeah.
Awesome. I love the fact that we're able to do this. We weren't doing it under Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena. Now we're able to get some of these more talented, more skillful players. And it's been, I think, overall a benefit, even though the team's kind of lost its way currently. And it doesn't seem like we're really getting on path. I think the message in the locker room's kind of been worn out. But at the same time, it just seems like ever since he started, there's always been that divide, that MLS American only divide that you talked about with Abby Wambach and, you know, Bruce Arena. And it just, that scares me. I don't think we need to be inward looking. I think we need to look to every avenue we possibly can to make this team better. Like, I don't care where we get the players from. If they want to play for America, that's great. Come play for America. I would love to have you play for us if you're going to help us win. Like, that's, I mean, it's soccer. All I care about right now is whether or not we make the World Cup and we win. And I mean, we're clearly a far way away from doing that, but isn't that what the goal is? Like, I don't need any more than to win. So let's get players that help us win.
Yeah. And I could agree with that. And it's funny because I heard Landon Donovan say once on an interview, I'm not sure why I was listening to a Landon Donovan interview, but
Landon Donovan needs to,
he just needs to shut his mouth.
I guess that's for another discussion. Yeah. Cause I love Landon. Let's get real. He's a great player to watch at times.
And it's funny because I think Klinsmann exclusion of him in 2014 was kind of the first domino that turned a lot of the opinion against him. I mean, rightly or wrongly.
Was that the same cycle when it all came out that there was a bunch of locker room fighting about Klinsmann and
a
bunch of dirty stories?
Same cycle.
Was that
That came out in like 2013, I think. That
like kind of start in my mind, that kind of like started the split between these two camps of America rah-rah and kind of more the worldly view that I've adopted.
Because I think Klinsmann kind of always came across as this guy who has challenged our way of thinking, and, you know,
which needs to be challenged,
but certainly the results have to follow as well. But going back to my point about Landon, and he said something like, oh, well, it would mean more if the team won a World Cup with only American-born players. And I thought, that's such a simplistic view of the game. You know, citizenship is not defined by where you were born. You know, if your father was an American serviceman and serving in Germany, are you going to go tell him that his son is not American because he wasn't born here? That's bullshit, in my opinion. But
it is bullshit.
You know, so this idea from Arena and Wambach and Donovan to a lesser extent, that it, you know, if it's raised in America, it's better somehow. It doesn't track what the global game is, because you look at what Germany has, you look at how many guys on their team could have played for other teams. You had Mesut Ozil, who could play for Turkey. You got Ilkay Gundogan, Emre Can, Sami Khedira. You know, there are other, Shkodran Mustafi, you got tons of players in that team who could play for other teams. Do you really think Germany thinks, oh, that 2014 World Cup we won doesn't mean as much because some of these guys, you know, aren't German enough for us? No, you take the best players you can get. Fabian Johnson's one of the top four players in our pool. I would say John Brooks as well, honestly. You're saying you don't want those guys because they weren't born here?
Right.
You know, so I think that...
I don't understand the logic. I don't get it. Maybe one of your Twitter followers can shoot you a message,
which I will relate
and you
to.
Can relay it to me.
Well, it's funny because
about what the whole interest is in having just purely American soil, born and bred players. Because I mean, that sounds great. Like as an American, ooh, more American stuff. But it's not like these people are any. If they want to identify as American, who am I to say that they're any less of an American? They're obviously eligible to come play for us.
Yeah. And if they make that choice, then all the better. I'm not more or less American than anyone else, you know? So with that, I mean, I think that's really the concern where I don't even know if it's an American first mentality. I think some people disguise it as that, but it's really an MLS or bust mentality.
Because
the core of our squad should come from MLS. And yeah, ideally you want your domestic league producing the players, but our talent development system is not where it needs to be in terms of producing top quality players. You know, and there's a lot of different factors which we can get into on a later episode, but just like talent development here is not where it needs to be. MLS isn't producing the kind of players it needs to. So this idea that somehow we're going to get far in a World Cup solely depending on MLS players is so naive in my opinion. I genuinely try to understand where people come from, but I don't see it. When you look at the product we've seen the past couple days, and yes, a lot of those were European-based players too, but look at how much Bradley's regressed since he came back. You know, that's really the key. That's the one guy I would point to kind of exemplify that point, you know?
Right, definitely. He was a cog at Roma, you know? He was running that show over there when he was able to get playing time. But that's, you know,
yeah, then
American bias. We could go into that.
Well, no, but then it's kind of like
he was a good player. Like I'm watching him at Rome. I genuinely enjoyed watching his early U.S. national team career. I remember I was at, I think it was the 2006 World Cup warm up games, and they brought him on. He was real young then. I was like, who the hell is this guy? And he's been a joy to watch. He was a joy to watch that night. He's been a joy to watch since. But lately, he's just ever since the Toronto move. I'm with Klinsmann. I'm against players moving back to play in MLS because there's just nothing there to offer. I mean, it's a great league, but I mean, it's not. Let's be real. It's a great league, but it's still pretty shitty.
Yeah, I mean, we all want MLS to succeed. I don't think that's ever been the issue, but you know, I think we acknowledge that right now the best option for our players, if they can, is to move abroad. Like there's certain exceptions to that. You know, you look at a guy like Kleshchen coming back, I think was probably a good move for him, but Bradley coming back was worthless, you know. I think,
how do you feel about Kleshchen not being included?
I would have put him in the lineup somehow, honestly. I would,
right?
Because
we needed a player like him. And I know we literally just went on this big rant about how I'd be making up the core of our team because the league just isn't there yet. And I called the league shit and all that stuff. But I really think last night in a microcosm, we could have used him.
Absolutely. There was no creativity other than Pulisic. The Jones-Bradley midfield doesn't give you that. I think I would have personally played a 4-2-3-1. I would have gone four at the back, just go Johnson, Brooks, Gonzalez, Yedlin instead of Chandler, in my opinion. And then I would have...
You got to go Yedlin.
Yeah, because Chandler's great for a club, but for whatever reason, when he puts on the U.S. jersey, he struggles. So then I would have gone, yeah, you can still go Jones and Bradley as the two, but then ahead of them have Kleshchen play as your number 10, Pulisic on the left, and then on the right, you know, you have a few different options. You can go Bedoya, or you could even, you know, you could play, or you could move Johnson there and play someone else at left back. And then I would have played Bobby Wood on his own. And I think you utilize some pace there and his movement. But at least you have some creativity in midfield. So, you know, it's like, certainly we're not bashing MLS because I think we acknowledge as good players.
I kind of was bashing.
But I mean, but
I'm just jaded. I'm jaded because my crew, after such a great year last year, had a pretty crap year.
So. Yeah, but that's the thing. Like you've watched MLS, you've grown up watching it, so you can acknowledge its faults while still acknowledging its it's an up and coming league, but like a guy like Kleshtin, regardless of where he plays at, improves your team, you know. And I wasn't sold on him initially coming back to the US fold, but you know, the past few games that he's gotten an opportunity, he's taken advantage of it. So then why do you go back to the status quo Jones Bradley midfield? You know, what I don't know what that offers you. And so I guess, you know, if we're thinking that maybe Klinsmann does get fired, if he does get the sack, you know, what manager would you want to change things, you know, to not stick with a Jones Bradley midfielder? You know,
in a Mexico type game, a Jones Bradley midfield gives you what, experience? But then you negate their experience by going with a new formation that you haven't busted out for how many years against Chile?
Yeah, exactly. Two, three years. Yeah.
Like, what are you going for? You know, are you trying something new, or are you trying to go with the tested and true? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't really commit one way or the other, so
it's kind of like a mashup right now of all these things, and there's not real one, I guess, unifying vision. And I mean, that's another problem I have with United. We're kind of in the same boat, not to transition to out of U.S. soccer, but
that lack of a vision for players, I'm sure, is frustrating, wouldn't you think?
Definitely. I think that's what we're seeing now. I think that's why we're seeing them kind of the heart's just not there. There's no leader on the field. There's nobody to kind of rally it when they're down, because there's just nobody there that understands really what's going on.
So would you bring in a guy like Marcelo Bielsa,
I would love Marcelo Bielsa, but I'm pretty sure this team would literally catch fire in about a year and a half if Marcelo Bielsa was our coach.
I mean, because otherwise, that's the only name I can think of that's not an MLS guy, you know?
He was the one who, he contracted with Lazio.
And then he left
for like a day.
Yeah. And he left like a couple days later. It was great.
That's a vision. That's a vision we could all get behind.
I think you and I have talked about this before. Like, if it's not someone like that, it is going to be an MLS guy.
Next coach is 100% going to be an MLS.
Well, and none of the names I'm hearing are exciting. You have Bruce Arena, who's a retread of a decade ago.
We can bring back Rob Bradley after he gets fired from Swansea,
which probably won't be too long from now, honestly. But that's another story.
No offense to Bob Bradley. I'm just every U.S. soccer fan is going to hate me after that.
No. I think everyone's going to agree with you, honestly. You know, you hear names like Peter Vermees or Dominic Kinnear, and you know, again, it's that fear of just sticking with the status quo MLS guys. Or, you know, certainly there's talent to be unearthed there. Like, I don't deny that. You know, you'd like to see a guy like Will Trapp get some playing time, or more Kellen Acosta.
What's happened with Will Trapp?
I don't know. He's your boy. He's from Columbus.
Like, I know. But, like, I figured at this point he'd be having a little bit more of a starring role.
Yeah, he had a rough season for the Crew, didn't he?
Yeah, they all had a rough season.
But you know, I mean, obviously you have a guy like Pulisic, who's kind of your beacon for the future. And speaking of Pulisic, you know, we're going to kind of transition into some talk about getting back into the club season this weekend. We've got a lot of big games coming up this weekend. Since we're talking Pulisic, let's get started with Der Klassiker. So that is Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. You know, what are your thoughts just on that game, and kind of in the Bundesliga as a whole? You know, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on, but maybe that game, and you know, what do you think unfolds there? You know, Bayern's kind of had their number in recent years.
Bayern's gonna run it. Yep. Bayern's gonna run it.
You think so? Not even close, huh?
Yep. I mean, it'll be like 3-0. Robert Lewandowski has what, 2 goals? Sticks it to him. Bayern is just they're too good. They're going to come to play in this game. I mean, I love Borussia. They're one of the most exciting young teams. I mean, their roster is just stacked with, like, it's like a Football Manager roster. Like, this is the exact team that I would buy if I was playing Football Manager. I would just buy Borussia.
Yeah.
And it would be awesome. And I would win Champions League every year.
But it's a
and
good
I
point.
Love Tuchel. Tuchel's great. I just don't think nobody in this league stacks up to Bayern. And Ancelotti, I mean, he's not the greatest league coach, but he's a top five manager in the world. I just don't think I think they're just gonna overpower him. I think they're gonna be coming off the international break. They're gonna be too focused and too ready for Borussia. I don't see Borussia winning, but
is that game in Bayern or in Dortmund? Let's
get that up.
It's in Dortmund. Okay, it's in Dortmund. So I think that gives Borussia Dortmund a chance. I will say, like you said, I love the team, the way their team's been set up. You know, you brought in Ousmane Dembele. You know, you bring back Mario Götze. You have Emre Mor. You've got Pulisic. You got Julian Weigl, who I think is going to be one of the best midfielders in the world. If he's not already one of the better midfielders in the world, he'll get there. You got Rafael Guerrero, who I love watching. One of my favorite young players. You know, you've got a lot of good young pieces, but they've dropped quite a few points already this season. This is almost a must win for them if they want to compete. I get the feeling we actually will see a draw. I see 1-1. I feel like Lewandowski probably gets on the board, and then maybe Aubameyang for Dortmund to equal, you know, to tie it up. But I think that's going to be a hell of a game, though, in terms of the attacking talent on display.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. But I mean, Dortmund started off, what, hot again? They started off hot last year as well. But the last couple weeks, they've been pretty up and down. I think they're just – they're. I mean, they're clearly working through stuff. They brought in a lot of new faces. They don't have Mkhitaryan, you know, running their midfield like they did. I think they'll be fine. They are fine right now. I think they'll – get even better, but at this stage, what, mid-November, I don't think they're at Bayern's level. I could definitely see a draw, but I think they're Bayern's too tough. So I'm 3-0. I said 3-0, right?
Yeah, 3-0. But speaking on level with Bayern, you look at the Bundesliga table right now, and you see a really surprising team level on points with Bayern Munich, and that's Red Bull Leipzig, who's been one of the more controversial stories in German football because of the
Red Bull Leipzig's good.
Yeah, they've built their squad really well. They've got a lot of young talented players. My favorite is Naby Keita. That kid's going to be a star. But I mean, you look at them; they just got promoted, and they're level with Bayern on 24 points, and they've looked fantastic so far.
They have. I love – who's the one guy that they have that they bought from England? Or, yeah, it was England. They have some guy over there that's great. They have looked fantastic. I'm loving Red Bull, but it's also – I've given them enough of my money. I feel like I'm almost part owner of Red Bull. A lot of Red Bulls I drink during a day.
Well, it's funny because the ownership has been such an issue with them in Germany because of the fan ownership rules and how they've sort of gotten around that. So, you know, they've kind of – you know, been the source of controversy, but at the same time, people want Bayern Munich to have a legitimate challenger, you know?
Right. I thought it was hilarious. The Dortmund fans boycotted Leipzig when they played, and then the away stands were still sold out because it just fans had enough team. So yeah, there is the hardcore support that would boycott them, that is boycotting. They're throwing takes heads onto the pitch or whatever they're doing. Over time, though, I mean, there's so many teams that have corporate ties in German football. They're going to be here to stay, and they're going to challenge Bayern and Dortmund. They just have too much money, and they're too invested in the game. I mean, you see Red Bull invest in MLS, and they're a solid team most years, even in the parity-filled MLS. They're not afraid to throw around money, and when you're not afraid to throw around money like Bayern, good things are gonna happen.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what a lot of people, you know, because the Bundesliga has been brought over to the US and it's on Fox, but its ratings really suck, And I think, you know, a lot of it, sure, is due to the fact that Fox is awful and they don't know how to cover soccer properly. But also the fact that, like,
they need to bring back Gus Johnson.
Oh, that'll do it. But the fact that Bayern hasn't really had legitimate competition for that top spot, you know, has really kind of turned some people off that might have been casual fans. And just in terms of, there's not really anything to get invested in if you don't have a legitimate title race. You know what I mean? And
definitely. I mean, you look at the other leagues, and at least there's Real to the Barcelona. You know, England always had four teams when we were younger. Now there's like a billion. Anybody can win in England, which is great. What? Juventus is probably just as bad as Bayern. But, I mean, you have Napoli that was giving them a run last year. It's good to see Leipzig giving Bayern a run this year. Dortmund, they gave them a decent run last year, but I don't think they finished anywhere near.
Yeah, they
points behind.
Yeah, Bayern ran away with it. So, and you know, I would
was
hope,
fantastic.
Yeah, they had a good season. Bayern just is too powerful. So, you know, certainly you hope that there's a legitimate title race there. I know one place there is going to be a legitimate title race, and that's in La Liga. And we got the Madrid derby this weekend. Real Madrid versus Atletico Madrid. This game is never pretty to watch, but it's fun to watch because I think the way these two teams play just really makes for an interesting game in terms of tactics. Now, Real Madrid's coming in pretty shorthanded. I think Toni Kroos is out. I think Casemiro's out. Benzema might be out. Pepe is out. You know, so they've got a bunch of injuries, but they've still got
Morata out.
Morata's a doubt, I believe. He suffered some sort of injury playing for Spain. So, right. You know, I think they, you know, Real Madrid's going to be pretty shorthanded coming into this one, but at the same time, like, for Real Madrid fans, it's never an excuse to not produce a win. And with Atletico, Diego Simeone, you know, that tandem of Griezmann and Gamero up top, how do you see that one playing out?
I think Atletico is gonna get the win. I think the stat was that this is Simeone's worst start to a La Liga season. They still have been pretty good. I mean, they're sitting fourth right now, but they have some talent. They have some players on that team, and they're playing some pretty attacking football. Despite what they've done in the past, I it's nice to see that kind of evolution from them. But God, I love Griezmann. I hope he scores all the goals, and he has a big money transfer to Manchester United, and him and Pogba become bros again, and they bring back Patrice Evra, and they all sing in their hotel rooms together, and it's just one big happy Manchester United France family. Because I love Griezmann. I love watching Griezmann. I'm going to watch this game just for Griezmann, despite the fact that it's one of the biggest games on the footballing calendar every year. Makes me so sad that Atletico has not two tries and they weren't able to beat Madrid in either of those Champions League finals.
That's the thing. They beat him in La Liga. They can't beat him in the Champions League. And, right. You know, go ahead.
I have no problem predicting Madrid to win this game though, solely because of that. I think they're a good league team. They're a fantastic Champions League team, but for some reason they can't get over this Real Madrid hump in Champions League. But I think this weekend they're going to take them. I think there's too many injuries on Madrid's side. I think Atletico, decently rough start, not the worst, but I think coming out of this break they're going to have their stuff together and it's going to be a good game. I'm going to go 2-1 Atletico.
Yeah, I'm leaning with you. I think the injuries are a little bit much for Real Madrid. They're going to be weak in midfield. I know they have Modric, but I believe Kovacic is out as well. I have to double check that, but they're going to be very light in midfield. So you just wonder if Atletico is going to be able to control the tempo of the game. And, you know, with guys like Koke and Gabi and Saul and all these, you know, really solid players, you know, you just wonder if Atletico, especially at home, I think they get it done. I think 1-0, I think Griezmann gets the winner. And, you know, I think I think that'd be a great result for them. So we're both leaning the Atletico way, but you know, looking at the La Liga table, you've got Real Madrid on 27 points, Barcelona on 25, Villarreal on 22, Atletico 21, Sevilla 21. Sevilla is kind of an interesting team with Sampaoli there. You know, the way they play football is very frantic, but it's fun to watch. He's a, you know, he's a smart coach. He knows what he wants out of his team. You know, we're having watched a few La Liga games this season. Where were you? Where are you leaning with that?
I love that hire. I love what Sevilla did there and how they retooled their team after last year's Europa League. I mean, they're what you want your football team to be if you're not one of the big boys. You know, like you want a well-run team that's not afraid to go out and get those coaches that are going to play that type of fun, frantic style. So I mean, I think they'll probably, in all honesty, they probably won't get higher than fifth. Very well run.
Did we lose you?
Am I gone?
No, you're back. Well, your face is gone, but I can still hear your beautiful voice.
Awesome. Okay. Well, as long as you can hear my voice. Yeah. I think Villarreal. They do this every year. They're a solid team. And no, Atletico, Barcelona, and Real are not going to finish. One of those teams is not going to finish outside of the top four. So fifth is probably the best case scenario I'm seeing. But that's still great. I mean, they're great to watch. I try to watch them anytime I possibly can.
Yeah. Now moving along to another big derby game in a big European city. We got the Milan derby, Inter versus AC Milan. I know certainly you have some strong feelings about Frank de Boer getting fired at Inter. I got to say that the way the whole situation went down at Inter is really confusing to me. You know, you had him hired basically right before the season started because Mancini left. You barely gave him 2 months and he loses his job. And I have no idea who their coach is now because they change it every few months.
I have no idea as well, but I mean, I don't get it. You fire Mancini because you bring in these new owners. The guy's been in the job less than the guy at freaking Palermo, which is ridiculous, probably. I'm just assuming Palermo goes through like 14 managers a season. Like, you don't bring him in. He's got this squad, and I know they haven't been producing, but you don't give him any time to really bring them together, get 3 months, and then he's out the door. Like, it's makes no sense to me. I don't understand that style of management. You got to let a guy at least have the season. Like, that's ridiculous, even if you fire a guy after one season. But, I mean, we see that happen all the time. We see weeks happen. You get weeks to implement your team style. And it's not like this guy didn't have a track record of success. Like, he was very successful at Ajax. But it boggles my mind. Like, why would you – I don't understand. I get the results weren't there. But stick with him. Let him see what he could do.
And they didn't really give him a chance to buy any of his players, you know? Like,
right. He was working with borrowed players. I mean, granted, the squad is – it's a strong squad. It should be top four in Italy. But at the same time, he came in so late. He had no window. He's working with borrowed players, and he gets 3 months, and he's out the door.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
I don't think the talent he did have is that good, honestly.
You don't think so?
No, I mean, you've got Icardi, and I love Icardi. Icardi's one of my favorite strikers in the world.
Icardi's had some other issues this
season. I mean, Icardi maybe needs to think about the things he says in the media, or in books for that matter. But you've got Icardi, who I think is an elite striker. But other than that, you know, you've got Perisic, who didn't really hack it at Dortmund or Wolfsburg. You've got, who else do they got? They've got Adam Jajic. He's okay. You've got Adair.
Kondogbia
was a big money purchase from Monaco, but really hasn't done anything since he got there. You've got Gary.
He's barely even played this season.
You've got Gary Medel and Felipe Melo in midfield, which is about as uncreative a midfield as you'll ever have.
Did they sign Gabigol?
They did sign Gabigol. I think he debuted, if I'm not mistaken, but I'd have to double check that. He's been playing for them. I don't think he's done too much to start with, but you know, they said the same thing. They said the same thing about Coutinho at Inter. They got rid of him, and look what happened. So, you know, they do well to keep on to him. But, you know, for all the struggles that Inter have had, AC Milan, on the other hand, have really had a resurgence. And, you know, I wrote about it on the blog site a couple weeks ago, but they have a core of young Italian talent, which is super fun to watch develop with, you know, Donnarumma, Romagnoli, Locatelli.
Love Locatelli.
Oh, my God. Locatelli, that kid, I'm telling you, he scored that winner against Juventus. I believe it was against Juventus, right? Yeah, I mean, yep. It was a gorgeous strike. But, I mean, that kid just has it all. And, you know, for me, it's always cool to see a good AC Milan. It's just something we grew up with AC Milan being great. And it's been weird to see them dip so much, especially with the players that they've had have just been confusing, you know?
I agree with you 100%. I miss them being in the Champions League final. I miss them pulls ass after – you know, that awful night in Istanbul. You hear it a lot in other sports, but football is better when Milan is good. So it's awesome to see these young guys come through. Donnarumma, we're going to be hearing his name for the next like 20 years.
Easily.
That's fantastic. I just hope they hold on to these guys and they're not, have they sold that club yet?
I believe they're going to. I thought they entered into a deal to be sold. So hopefully that, you know, that new investment group brings in some serious players. And because I think Juventus needs a legitimate challenger, needs a legitimate challenger to the Serie A title. Because right now Juventus is running away with it. They're already 4 points ahead of Roma after 12 games played.
Do you think Roma can mount a challenge all season?
No, I honestly don't. I don't think they've got enough scoring, in my opinion.
No.
Dzeko apparently is more concerned with pulling guys' pants down during game.
This is the same thing with them every year, is it not?
Yeah.
They're near the top. Last year, weren't they leading?
They were near the top.
Juventus was doing their thing.
Yeah, they were.
Before Dybala and all them.
Napoli and Roma were started last season really well, if I remember correctly. But, you know, you got El Shaarawy, you got Salah, you've got Paredes and De Rossi in midfield. I don't see the elite talent, though, that Juventus has. You know, Juventus has legitimate game changers, in my opinion, with Dybala, Marchisio, Mandzukic at times, you know, different players they can plug in there who are good, talented players. And they have so much depth too. You know, you've got a Patrice Evra, you've got a Dani Alves, you've got Alexandro, you've got all these really, really talented players.
You're right. We talked about the depth or the difference in talent between Bayern and Dortmund. But that's nothing compared to the difference in talent between Juventus and literally any other team in Serie A right now. I mean, that's why I still contend Inter is one of the better teams in the league, even though we went through that roster and kind of came to the conclusion that of Italy and looking at Juventus, I mean, this team has no chance at competing.
Yeah, they don't have the top-level talent, but then again, like you said, outside of
Juventus. But nobody does.
Nobody does. You know, Napoli, once they sold Higuain, I forget to mention Higuain now on Juventus, you know, only making that gap larger. So, you know, Napoli has Milik from who they bought from Ajax.
Who's out.
Who ruptured his ACL, so he's going to be out for a little while. So that gap is really going to kind of grow. So I do think there's a chance for Milan to get in there as that second place team and secure Champions League again. And I think once you get Champions League again, I think it shows
you can hold on to your
players. You hold on to your players, and it shows other players that you're targeting that you've got real ambition, and you're on the upswing. And I think that would be a really cool thing to see.
I remember what was it now, 5-6 years ago. They kind of were on the upswing again when they brought in Zlatan and Robinho. And they had a nice little Champions League run. I think they won the Serie A back then, too.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that nice little oasis in the middle of just nothing but dry death for them.
That's.
I mean, they've just had such a dry spell for so long. They've just been so down. And it's sad to see. Like, I want Milan to be back challenging Juventus, because I really think, I mean, we're seeing peak Roma right now. I don't think Roma has much higher ceiling than what we're seeing. Same thing with Napoli. Like, they're not going to be able to reach the same heights that Juventus reaches. But Milan can. Milan has the infrastructure. Milan has the history. Milan has the fans. You know, it's all in place. They just need to start producing now. And I think that's the best chance fans of Serie A have to have an actual challenger to Juventus. Otherwise, we're going to get like 40 Juventus titles in a row.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting you say that, because now we look at, you know, we look at what's going on in Ligue 1 with PSG actually not being in first place, which is crazy. You know,
I love it.
You've got.
I want Mario to fly that helicopter all day.
Yeah, I was gonna say, for those
people of Nice, probably don't. People of Nice definitely do not want him flying anything.
For people who have been keeping track of Ligue 1, why don't you tell us about what's going on with Balotelli in Nice right now?
Balotelli is flying right now. What, he's got about 6 or 7 goals.
He's doing well. I don't have the stats in front of me, but yeah, he's.
I think he's already like quadrupled his amount of goals scored in like the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
I mean,
last time I remember him doing anything was shirtless flexing at Euro 2012, and since then he's just been injured and just doing dumb stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because I've always liked him. I've always thought, like,
he's fantastic talent.
He's a legitimately, he can be an elite player if he ever kept his mind straight, but he just hasn't been able to do that to this point. So, you know, he's
got that personality that you love. I love sports personalities. I hate this kind of like toned down robot culture that everybody's kind of become, where they're too afraid to express themselves. I think we're kind of seeing it come back a little bit. Pogba's kind of got a personality, but sometimes you feel like that's more marketing than actual genuine personality. But Balotelli is just hilarious. Like, the things he does legitimately make me laugh.
And then,
like, I love the fact that he said he was going to fly a helicopter around Nice if they won. That's like the fat owner from Montpellier dyeing his hair and running around shirtless when they won their title, whenever they did that, like 2010 or 2011.
Yeah.
That's great. We need more.
Yeah, you need that sort of character, especially like in a league where PSG has been dominant for so long, to have another story like a Balotelli resurgence. I mean, because let's face it, so many people wrote him off. They're like, oh, he's done. He won't get back into the Italy fold. I'm not so sure about that. I think he can get back into the Italy fold, because Italy doesn't have any elite strikers playing for them right now. You know, they have Pella's gone to China. I mean, who else is there? Simone Zaza, Adair. I mean,
Simone Zaza's fantastic.
Yeah, Simone Zaza with the worst run-up in penalty history.
I still see it in my head. I still see it.
But you were mentioning Paul Pogba earlier, and it kind of brings us to, you know, our other big topic of the day, and that is Manchester United versus Arsenal at the weekend. Unfortunately for us in the U.S., if you're on the East Coast, that game's at 7:30. If you're on the West Coast, if you're on the West Coast, well, you're fucked, because it's at 4:30. And
late night.
No, oh God.
Just keep drinking. Just keep drinking.
Seriously, if you go out on Friday, just stay up at that point if you're on the West Coast.
Yep.
But what are your kind of general thoughts going into that game? I know both teams are pretty injury riddled.
I think our backline, sorry to interrupt on that one, but my first thought is I think our backline is pretty screwed.
So who's out? They say Shaw's going to be out. Bailey is out.
Which Shaw, I think, at this point could probably play if he wanted to.
Yeah. But Smalling is out, right?
Smalling's out. Shaw's out. Bailey's out. We're going to have Jones in there running around doing his weird crawling on the ground antics. Trying to head on. That's the greatest I've ever seen. I don't think I've laughed harder at any football clip than Jones. Was that against Arsenal?
Yes,
on the
it
ground,
was actually
crawling, trying to head the ball away.
Yep.
It makes me cry every time I see it. So that's a wonderful United Arsenal moment that we have. But who do we have?
Yeah, I think Valencia's out. I think Fellaini is out. Rooney's supposed to be out. From an Arsenal perspective, Hector Bellerin is out. Santi Cazorla's out. Alexis Sanchez, I think he might actually get rested because his hamstring is basically hanging on by a thread at this point. And I'm
he
amazed.
He played last night?
He played with a hamstring injury despite all Arsenal fans basically.
He scored two goals.
He scored a brace against Uruguay. And, you know, all of us, myself included, were just fearing the worst about his hamstring. So I would honestly rest him if possible. I don't think he'll want – well, I know he won't want to be rested. I don't think he will get rested, though. But so both teams are coming in pretty injury riddled.
Well,
you know, it's going to be.
That. We are coming off a 3-1 win over Swansea, right? Feeling real high. United, I mean, it's a one step forward, two steps back kind of team. So I would, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be feeling pretty good. With or without Alexis Sanchez.
It's funny because from an Arsenal perspective, I'm dreading this game. There is a psychological block with Arsenal going to Old Trafford in the league and not being able to get a win. I can't remember the last time. I think the last time we got a win at Old Trafford, Adebayor scored a game winner. So that should tell you how long ago that was.
was this Pizzagate?
That might have been a year after Pizzagate, I think.
But that was Old Trafford, right? That wasn't in.
That wasn't at. Yeah, I think that was at Old Trafford, if I remember.
Yeah, that was the great. That's my favorite memory.
But you know,
from this.
So it's been a long time that since Arsenal's won there in the league. We won there in the FA Cup 2 years ago. You know, but that's the FA Cup. The league is just different. And last year, honestly, was as good an opportunity to do it as any. You had Louis van Gaal, basically a dead man walking. You had Marcus Rashford making his first start. And, of course, he scores two goals. So I think Arsenal fans are, like, genuinely just thinking there's some sort of hex on us when we go to this place and we're somehow going to lose this game. I know Zlatan's also out for you guys because of a yellow card accumulation, but I honestly think from a United perspective, and certainly tell me if I'm wrong, that might not be the worst thing because I think it allows you to play Rashford up top. And I think if you're smart, you play Martial on the left, and especially with Hector Bellerin out for Arsenal at right back, you assume that it's either going to be Carl Jenkinson coming into right back or Shkodran Mustafi moving from center back to right back. And I think United can exploit that. I'm terrified of that, to be honest with you.
I agree with you. I mean, that's definitely the one area that I'm looking forward to because I think we can make that switch and get a little bit more speed in there. Cause I mean, Zlatan's a great player, but he's not, you know, a spring chicken. He's not moving around the pitch and we can't really find those areas as well. But yeah, that's definitely an exciting aspect of this potential lineup that we're going to see. One thing that does frighten the crap out of me is I'm pretty sure Wayne Rooney's going to be playing in there with a gigantic hangover from his off.
He had some fun, apparently, didn't he?
Well, one thing that I love about Wayne Rooney is that he is not one to ever turn down a drink. That boy will put him away until he literally stumbles into a wedding and takes his shirt off and gives it to some random girl that's not his wife. So that guy knows how to party. On the other hand, I'm pretty sure he has not progressed one iota since he was a 17-year-old at Everton.
You know, what is your thought on Rooney, just in general? What is his role in the team? Should he even be in the 11 if everyone's healthy?
No. I don't think so. I think when he's out, players are able to find their positions more naturally. They're not constrained by whatever Rooney's doing. And they're able to gravitate into the areas that they're out there to play in. But when you put him out there, it kind of congests everything. And he's a great player. He could. It's like he's still a wonderful player. I don't see where he fits in. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, is he a number 10? Is he a second striker? Sort of the same role. Is he a midfielder? You know,
I mean, you'd like to think he's a number 10, but I don't see it anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if he creates enough going forward to be a number 10, in my opinion.
They've kept trying. They're going to push him back all the way until he's a goalkeeper, probably.
At the rate he's going, honestly, yeah, I could see that. So looking at this United team, how would you want to see them line up in terms of the guys who are available? You know, assuming Rooney's out, because I've heard he's injured, with the guys they do have available, how would you want to see them line up, or what formation, or, you know, how do you think Mourinho will line up knowing that he's going against Arsene Wenger?
I mean, I imagine we'd probably go Carrick, then Herrera and Pogba. Then we put Rashford, Martial, and then I'd love to see Mata. And then our back line, obviously, is what do we got? Like Darmian, Rojo, Jones, and Ashley Young. That's really gross.
Do you think – so you would go Mata over Lingard on that right wing?
Yeah. Yeah. I like Jesse Lingard. He just played a full game against for England, didn't he? Did he not?
Did he start that game? I don't remember.
I'm not entirely sure. I guess we could look it up. But yeah, I would like to see Mata get in there.
Yeah, and from an Arsenal perspective, I think that back line for United certainly will leave some opportunities. You know, I do think United will be pretty strong in possession if that's the midfield that they play, with Carrick kind of distributing from deep, and Herrera seems to kind of up his game when he plays against Arsenal. And I have this awful, awful feeling that for all the criticism I've dealt towards Paul Pogba, he's going to have one of those masterclass games, and he'll score like a 40-yard screamer and dab. And
did you see his pass?
Oh yeah,
his pass today, his outside of the foot pass across the field.
I mean, when he wants to, he is unplayable. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Or I shouldn't say when he wants to, but when he's on his game, he's unplayable. But from your perspective, what? As a United fan, what have you seen from him? Were you, you know, obviously the price tag is what it is. You know, a player's value is what you pay for him. But what have you been expecting from him? Have you been disappointed, or are you still saying give him more time to settle in? Because he stepped up big in that last game against Swansea.
Yeah, I definitely haven't been disappointed. I mean, he's a fantastic player. He shows it all the time. I have no doubt that he is going to be a fantastic player for United. I just think the team, the way it's set up, the way it's coming together, we've been up and down. I mean, just like his season, he's just been going with the team. So I don't see any issue with the price tag or with his play. I think that's the one player I will always put on the team sheet, and whether he's playing well or not, like I trust him more than anyone else on this team to figure it out and get it going. So I have no issue with his season so far. I mean, it's still early. And he's still, I mean, arguably our best player.
Do you see him as a number 10, a box to box? What role do you see him playing? Because I think that's kind of been, you know, from the games that I've seen of United, it seemed like his role hasn't been defined as of yet.
No, and that was the thing talked about when we bought him, is that where are we gonna play him? I kind of like to see him more in the box to box role. I don't think he's necessarily the playmaker that we really need. But I don't see anybody else on this team that really has the skill set that he has. I mean, granted, how many people in the world really have the skill set that he has? I would love it, though, if we had a 20-something Rooney playing striker for us with Rashford and Lingard, or Martial and Rashford, however you want to do it, and then Pogba sitting behind them. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're not getting that Rooney. Zlatan's great, but Zlatan's going through sort of a interesting patch. I mean, this is probably the, what the long. I mean, he's not going to play, so probably not worth spending too much time talking about him. But this is like his longest dry spell he's gone through in a while, and I think that's honestly just been kind of a microcosm of the team as a whole. I mean, we play some inspiring football, and then, you know, we still have remnants of Louis Van Gaal all over us.
Yeah, and it's interesting that last game against Swansea, I think he scored in that one, but before that, he was definitely struggling, and it seems like they're still trying to figure out their identity under Mourinho. You know, and I think it kind of comes with the territory of being manager at Manchester United that, you know, there's going to be expectations. And, you know, obviously, as an Arsenal fan, I don't like Jose Mourinho for things he's said and done. But, you know,
do you think the game's passed him by?
To an extent, I think it's passing him by, because I don't think he can do what he used to do and still be successful. I think.
So you think we're slowly watching the decline, the painful decline of Jose Mourinho over?
I
guess it hasn't really been slow. It's been pretty
rapid. It was rapid, because
a year and a half ago he was a champion.
Exactly. You go from a champion at Chelsea to completely falling apart the next season. He basically lost that dressing room, and he lost Eden Hazard. And you can tell, because we're seeing the real Eden Hazard this season. So, you know, I wonder, his act kind of wears thin and some of the antics. But at the same time, when it comes to a big game, you trust him to get it together. And you trust him to stifle the opponent's attack. And that's something that Arsene Wenger kind of struggles with when we go into games against Mourinho. Just that, you know, Wenger wants to open up and try to play expansive football and try to break him down and create chances. And I think Jose knows how to counter that, and then how to break on an Arsene Wenger coach team and counter and score goals. And, you know, that's, I think there's definitely a mental block there for Arsenal beating Jose Mourinho in the league. You know, I think the only time we've done it was in the Community Shield last year. And, you know, that doesn't count for anything. So I think there's a mental block there. But I'm curious kind of to get an outside perspective, because certainly Ian and I are both Arsenal fans, so maybe sometimes we don't see the good and the bad. You know, we kind of focus on certain issues. But where do you see this Arsenal team, you know, with what you've seen this season, the players we have? As a United fan, you know, do you think this is a team that can win the title, or are we missing something?
I mean, Who's scoring the goals for you guys?
It's been Alexis and Theo thus far. And Ozil's definitely chipped in and gotten into the box more and scoring goals.
Right. And where do they play?
What do you mean?
What are their positions on the
field? Oh, well,
like, you guys for years have been talking about buying a striker.
Yeah.
Like, where is it? Why do you not have Lacazette? Why is he not there? He's leading the goal scoring again in France.
Well, they moved Alexis up. They moved Alexis up to a striker. That's where he's been playing this whole season, actually. Right. But he's not a pure striker, to your point. Absolutely.
Exactly. So, like, do I think this team is – I think Arsenal is a great team. You guys scare the crap out of me. Game, honestly, could go 8-2, or it could be 4-0, like the Chelsea-Manchester United game was a couple weeks ago. Like, I think you guys have the talent to compete with any team in the league. I just don't think you have that clinical finisher that can get on the end of your amazingly creative midfield that you have there. I mean, Sanchez is a phenomenal player, but if you complemented him with a Lacazette, I mean, that's like football manager stuff. That's fantastic.
And especially with
if you can't tell, I'm a big Lacazette fan. Like, you, if y'all don't buy him, then like we need to get. I love French football, apparently, because between him and Griezmann and Pogba, that team is just,
yeah, it's a lot of talent.
So good,
a lot of attacking talent good that's come out of there. And yeah, to your point, like, obviously, you know, Alexis has been playing up top, and you know, he's done really well. But yeah, if you gave him that supporting piece, it'd be potent to watch, especially with the form that Mesut Ozil's in. You know,
how's Giroud doing? Is he?
He is back. He was injured for several weeks.
Right.
He was out for almost 2 months. Yeah. He's actually been fairly durable, but he was out for 2 months because of an injury he suffered in the second game. He came back and scored the game winner against Sunderland, and then Gosh, it's been so long since our last game. I don't even remember what it was. It was the Spurs game. Yeah, he didn't really. We looked fairly flat in that game, honestly, and probably just about. I mean, we got the point, but it wasn't a particularly impressive point. So, you know, Giroud, I don't. If again, it goes back to if Alexis is going to be fit or not. If he's fit, then yeah, he starts. And if he is fit, I play Alexis up top, and then I play Theo wide right, Mesut in the middle. I'd probably go Iwobi on the left, and then midfield is going to be interesting because Cazorla is out. So I wonder if you see Xhaka and Coquelin, and then, you know, I think you see Jenkins in at right back, which means you guys will score three goals coming on that side. And then Mustafi, Koscielny, Monreal, Czech. So, you know, on paper, it's a fairly even matchup, actually, when you look at it.
Right.
Because I think there's weaknesses to be exploited. I think with Ozil and Sanchez's movement, that they can cause that United backline some problems. But if Giroud plays, his physicality could cause them problems because they don't have a Chris Smalling in. And
Bailly.
Or Bailly, who for all accounts started the season really well, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Before he got hurt?
Love that guy. Love the way he started. I mean, he was kind of scary. I thought he was going to like break someone's head. But yeah, he was a pleasant surprise coming from Villarreal.
Yeah.
So that was a big blow. Because, I mean, we didn't – you look at our back line. Does that strike fear into your strikers whatsoever, your midfield players? That's a paper – Manchester United should not have a back line of Rojo and Maniac Jones and Darmian. And I love Darmian, but he's just not – that it's poor. It's real poor.
So it's funny because we're both going into this game with a certain amount of trepidation.
Definitely.
Which is interesting.
Because I mean, we just don't, like, from my perspective, like I've been saying, one step forward, two steps back. Like I honestly don't know what United we're going to get from this game. Like, I would love the Swansea United, but we're probably going to end up losing 4-0. Like, it could go either way. 50-50.
Well, speaking of, you know, kind of that perspective too, I feel the same way. I mean, I could see you guys, like you did last season, jumping out with an early goal, and then us having to chase the game and you guys just being able to hit us on the counter. Or conversely, I could see it being a draw. So let's get a score prediction from you on that one, you know.
Well, I mean, I imagine we'll park the bus in this game. And we'll draw 0-0. So it'll be fun.
That'll be great. That'll be worth getting up at 7:30 for.
Yep, 7:30. 0-0. Nothing happens.
Let's see. I'll say 1-1. I see a draw coming too.
Where do you see United's goal coming from?
Oh, Rashford. Rashford gets a. I think Rashford gets in on goal after a mistake somewhere. I think he gets clean in on goal and puts it away. And then I think Theo Walcott gets Arsenal's goal. I just have a feeling, you know, pretty similar to the game a couple of years ago at Old Trafford when United basically dominated and they were up 1-0 and then Theo scored a deflected goal to make it 1-1. I see it kind of playing out like that. I like United's midfield if they are going with Herrera, Carrick and Pogba. I think that's going to give us some problems.
I can't believe Carrick's still on this team, to be honest with you.
I mean, but it shows how they're dependent on him to kind of be that deep controlling player, you know?
They definitely are. Like, who else can run that role on this team? Also, happy birthday to Paul Scholes.
Oh, yeah.
But all these years, and it's still Carrick. I love Carrick. He's one of my favorite players. But at some point, I mean, he's you got to bring in someone else to transition him out of that role. But I mean, I guess if it's working, you know.
Yeah, why change it, right? It's interesting with Carrick because, you know, there were times last season where he wasn't playing at all, you know.
Right.
And
right.
All of a sudden he's back in the team and kind of cemented that place again. You know,
I thought he had retired.
Well, and it's funny because, like, you know, Pogba's time at Juventus, he played with Pirlo and Marchisio or Vidal or all these different guys. But Pirlo was kind of the guy that made that that engine, you know, go. And I'm not comparing Michael Carrick to Andrea Pirlo, don't get me wrong, but just in the way that they sort of sit back and dictate the game. And, you know, if you press them, yeah, they struggle a little bit, but if you give them too much time on the ball, they're going to pick you apart, and it allows your midfield players to push forward a little bit. I think definitely. Maybe that's why you can see an improvement out of Pogba.
And I think, yeah, definitely. I was just going to say that. I think the fact that Carrick's in this team will allow Pogba to get those penetrating runs into the box and create havoc in your defense, which I love that. I mean, you saw that at Euros and stuff. Like the fact that he's able to run from deep with the ball, and he's got so much skill, and he's just able to bring that extra layer of attack when you have Rashford and Martial up there as well. Like, it's just going to be, that's exciting. That's an exciting prospect.
It should be.
Having that steady presence of Carrick back there to free Pogba.
And that's where I think you guys are going to pose us some problems. And but it's interesting. We both went for the draw on that one. Actually, speaking, we didn't make a prediction on that Milan Inter game. Where are you going with that one? We'll get a quick prediction from you.
Locatelli is going to score 25 goals, and he's going to be the greatest thing to come out of Milan since Prada or whatever designer comes out of there. but seriously, 2-0.
2-0.
I don't see Inter scoring.
Yeah, I'd probably go in Milan 2-0. I think Locatelli gets one, and I think Milan probably nicks one on a set piece. And, you know, I think the Milan will be red for that day. But, you know.
I think Inter's going to score an own goal. I think there'll be an own goal. Locatelli and an own goal.
Ooh, that's a ballsy prediction. Now, if that comes.
Don't ask me how.
If that comes true, we know who to go to with all our future betting questions. But kind of one last thing to wrap things up. You know, we're seeing Liverpool and Chelsea at the top of the table. Of the two of them, who are you more impressed with so far? And who do you think has the better chance to win the title?
I'm more impressed with Liverpool because I think they have a weaker squad than Chelsea. But Chelsea, I think, has a better chance to win the title because they seem to be coming together right now under Conte, and they seem to be an unstoppable force at this point, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Dortmund-Liverpool game? It was a freaking ridiculous game in the Europa League. Last year, and I texted my buddy, who's a huge Liverpool fan. I was like, Liverpool's gonna win. They're gonna win the title, if not next year, the year after. They're too good. Jurgen's too good of a coach to not have them at the top of the table. And I mean, whether or not they could stick there all season, I'm not entirely sure. I think Conte has got Chelsea firing, but they're gonna be top two, I think. At least. I don't see Liverpool falling down from that too much.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, you look at Liverpool's front line and they just interchange so well, and everyone seems to know their role. And, you know, you've got Coutinho cutting in on his right. You've got, you know, Sadio Mane. You've got Firmino. You've got Lallana. You know, all these guys aren't necessarily world-class players, but they're all very good players in a good system that takes advantage of what they've got. And their pressing game is so good. They turn you.
It's like what Dortmund had when they won the title over Bayern. They have all these good, not fantastic world class players, but they have all these good players that buy into the system and play their asses off.
Yeah, and it's a system that works because their press turns you over. They create tons of chances and they dominate the ball. And right. So, you know, but at the same time, Chelsea, if you've got Eden Hazard on form and Diego Costa scoring goals, they can compete with anyone. And, you know, and I like Conte as a coach.
As much as I hate Diego
Costa. Oh, yeah. I mean, Diego Costa is a piece of shit, but he's a talented player. And with Conte, I really like their structure now with this kind of 3-4-3 that they're running, you know, with Pedro, Costa, Hazard, and then, you know, you've got Marcus Alonso and Victor Moses, and then you've got Matic and Conte kind of running the midfield. They look really well organized, and I think it took that loss to Arsenal a few months ago, I should say, the 3-0 loss, for them to kind of realize that they had to turn things around. But you know, it's not going to be an easy task for Arsenal or United or for City, for that matter, to get into the title you know, stay in the title hunt, because these two teams don't have any European games to worry about, you know?
Right, right. I mean, it's going to be – I mean, if I had to predict it right now, I'd go Chelsea, Liverpool, City. Top three.
Yeah,
Sorry, Arsenal fans.
No, I mean, it's very possible, honestly, with the way things are unfolding. But no, but I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to come on tonight. And we've hit a wide array of topics here. We went from the U.S. national team to all the European leagues to United Arsenal preview. So just wanted to thank you for coming on. And I know we'll have you on again real soon to hopefully talk about, you know, how things are going with these other leagues. And, you know, hopefully the U.S. turns things around, or we might be talking about a new coach very soon. But I just want to say, if you got any final message to the listeners.
No, I appreciate being on. It was a lot of fun. You're keeping me up past my bedtime here.
I was going to say, both of us are lawyers. This is way past our bedtime.
Way past. I'm going to be beat tomorrow. But the only final message I have to anybody who's listening out there is glory, glory, Man United.
And on that depressing note,
that's it.
I want to thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Eurosnob Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at UFGunerAJ, and you can find the podcast at EurosnobPod. Also, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/EurosnobPod, and we're trying to grow that, and check out our blog site as well, which you can find on there. Ian will be back next week, so we'll have another good show for you guys. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Thanks.